Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and tonight's guest is someone I've wanted to talk to for a long time. He's really, I feel, the bridge between science and consciousness, or the physical world and the world of spirit. And he's a scientist, and he's made this bridge in very technical ways, in very kind of, I would say, complex but also easy to understand, if we can talk about that, for the layman, you know. So his name is Nassim Haramein. He's a physicist, and we're going to be talking about the concepts of black holes, energy, and consciousness itself. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Your work is complex in some ways, because you involve a lot of you make the bridge between quantum physics and Einstein's theory of relativity.
Right.
By saying that there's some energy that they're not accounting for.
Correct.
And that is the spin. The spin.
No, they're accounting for the spin. There's something that's being not taken care of in current physics, in both sides of the equation, in Einstein field equation and in quantum theory. In both cases, there is no source for the spin of object. That is, if you ask a physicist, why is the Earth spinning? He'll tell you, because the sun's spinning. And then, why is this sun spinning? They'll tell you, because the galaxy's spinning, mm-hmm. And so on, all the way back to the Big Bang. Mm-hmm. And then they won't tell you where the energy came from to get everything spinning in the first place.
They won't tell you where the energy for the Big Bang came from.
Right, uh-huh. Or why things continue to spin for, you know, 14 billion years in our, you know, universe, considering the amount of friction there is out there, the amount of interaction between plasma dynamics, you would expect that everything would have stopped spinning. The assumption is that it's an ideal frictionless environment, which is not really what we observe. For instance, look at the layers on the sun, or the inside of the Earth is spinning at a different rate than the outside of the Earth. And, you know, there's not really any model to say where that spin is coming from.
Even the DNA is spinning and spiraling, isn't it?
Well, that's another issue. But in any case, the same occurs at the quantum level, where quantum theory really was a way to not have to deal or to address the fact that the electron is spinning continuously for billions of years at near the speed of light, and there's no really any source for that spin in current quantum theory.
So science just writes it off. They don't even put that in the equation.
Exactly. Quantum theory, as one of its first axiom, has an axiom that says that they're not going to address causation. That is, they're not going to address what is causing the electron to be spinning around the nuclei of an atom, you know, at the speed of light for billions of years without any energy input. That is a large omission, and my equation shows that that needs to be added in.
Well, what do you say is the reason for the spin?
My equation shows that the origin of spin is actually a space-time torque. And I'll just give you a little idea of what that is.
Yeah.
Einstein basically said that space-time is like a surface. You could think of it as a surface, like a trampoline, that is being bent by the mass of an object. So that gravity is not so much a force of the object itself, as in Newtonian physics, but that actually gravity is the force of an object applied onto the structure of space-time, just like the trampoline bending around the mass of a heavy ball in the middle of it, and any other ball in its surrounding would be attracted
so
to it.
The heavier the mass, the more it warps space-time, the fabric of space-time.
Correct, and then the larger gravitational field.
Right.
Now, my equation says, well, actually, when the ball bends the trampoline, all right, it doesn't just bend straight like this. It curls as it bends, just like water going down the drain curls as it goes down the drain. It doesn't go straight down the drain.
I see. So the fabric or the grid of space-time kind of
distorts.
Twists.
Yeah.
It, 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 I see.
And so
that's just a phenomenon of mass itself, mass and gravity.
Right. Energy curving space-time creates space-time torque.
Torque is that curve.
Force that forces things to spin. Just like you can't say you can't analyze all of the dynamics of the wheel of your car and think that you've got all the energy necessary for making that wheel make your car move if you don't have in your equation the V8 engine and the torque that the V8 engine produce in order for that wheel to move, to spin. And I believe that that's what we've forgotten, is to put the V8 engine.
So the greater the mass, the more extreme the torquing or the twisting?
It's relative to, as well, the radius of the system. So relative to the radius and to the mass of the system, you get higher and higher spin as the, if you'd like, the vortex of space-time torque move towards very, very small, like an atom. Now you would expect that it would spin near the speed of light, and that is exactly what you see when you look at the electron cloud. You've got a dynamic in which, you know, the electron spin is near the speed of light, so you know the space-time torque acts on the system at that point at very, very high velocity. As the radius gets smaller and smaller, then it keeps spinning faster and faster. So
or if it gets larger and larger, it spins slower and slower?
Correct, like the spin of a galaxy, you know. Although it takes a lot of torque to spin a whole galaxy with its 100 billion stars.
Right.
You know, the galaxy surface and mass is so it's so wide and big that it spins very slow relative.
And this torquing, you say, is because there's a black hole inside all these objects, you know, inside an atom, inside a galaxy, inside the sun, there are black holes.
Well, the other thing that that this theory predicts is that actually things can be divided to infinity, that there's a fractional problem. This is one of the reasons they didn't want to put torque in there, is because there's what they call a fractional problem where, you know, things can be divided towards infinity. And what I'm saying is that instead of avoiding that, which is really what the math is telling you, is to accept that and start to look at what it means in terms of the dynamics of the universe, if that's true. If an atom can continuously be divided to infinity, well, first of all, you probably stop building faster and faster accelerators, you know, to cut the atom in smaller and smaller pieces, because you know that you can keep doing that
infinitely.
And if you were to do that, where if you understood that, then you start to look for the pattern of divisions instead of trying to look for a fundamental particle. And
so
then
you looked at the patterns.
Right.
You said you'd read these old physics books and see they were wrong in places and say they weren't taking this into account.
Right. They typically don't take for account geometry and patterns of things. They're just looking for a fundamental structure, or I'm sorry, for a fundamental particle without paying attention to the geometry and to the pattern. And you know, nature is about pattern. And if you understood the pattern of nature, then you understand the key of creation. So my theory now consider the atom as a mini black hole. And that's why the electron clouds spin as near the speed of light at the event horizon of a mini black hole. And if you take that for consideration, and now you calculate how much force of gravity you have at the nuclei of the atom, all of a sudden you don't need the quantum theory strong force to hold the protons together, because gravity can do the job. It's strong enough in the context of a mini black hole the size of an atom.
So if we take this whole thing into account, the idea that the black hole, that changes everything, the way we look at the world, the way we look at technology even, right, will completely change.
Right.
Because you've added a whole element that no one saw before.
Right. Definitely our worldview would completely change. The way we consider ourselves, you know, if we're made out of mini black holes that we call atoms, that has huge philosophical implications, you know. It has implications that are very similar to many of the directive that many of the masters that have come on the earth have talked about to us, like every point in the universe has God within it. You know, every infinity is within you.
Because in the center of every black hole is a place of total presence with no time and no space.
Yeah, there's a point of infinite density that is called singularity that has a completely non-linear connectivity to all things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it starts to join very much so the description that's given by the Buddha, by you know, Krishna, by many, many of the masters on the earth that talked about, even, you know, the Bible and so on, that talks about the kingdom of heaven being within, you know, God being in everything. It all starts to make sense.
I see. So this is the bridge that we were talking between the science and consciousness, is that this
Correct.
Point of singularity exists within all systems.
Yes.
All systems themselves have a point zero.
Right, a point of singularity at its center that describes the infinite division of space. And, you know, and then eventually the theory goes on to show that there is a relationship between the space-time torque, right, and the electromagnetic radiation. So basically, we look at creation from the outside in, and so we are looking at the outside of black holes, seeing the radiative side, and we call them stars, pulsars, atoms, you know, suns, and so on. And but the inside is contracting towards infinity because of space-time torque. So you've got a relationship between the information going in as space-time torque and the information going out as electromagnetic radiation. Mm-hmm. And that generates a feedback loop of information transfer. And that becomes a perfect view in mathematics to describe the event of consciousness, which demands, you know, for self-awareness to occur, you need that feedback of information that allows you to know that you are yourself, or that you can see yourself in the mirror and know that it's you. That demands the feedback loop of information. You basically radiate information throughout, radiate energy throughout the day as you gather information, and that is the feedback of information transfer throughout creation at all levels that, you know, becomes a way to synthesize or to describe consciousness in a very mechanical and physical way.
So the point of singularity in us then is intelligence, consciousness radiating out information and then also taking in information.
Right. All in this view, the whole universe is this feedback of information transfer. The whole universe becomes a conscious universe.
So the universe itself, as you said, is a black hole that's actually expanding and contracting at the same time.
Correct.
So the galaxies are not moving away from each other like, you know, Hubble's?
They are moving away from each other. It's just that in this view, the universe is spinning, and as they're moving away from each other, there is a section of the universe that where the material is moving back towards each other, and the shape becomes a torus shape universe instead of just a flat universe or a bounded universe. It becomes a dynamical universe in which there's expansion at one level and a contraction at another. And when you look at a galaxy, actually, you get a really good model of that, because people think of galaxies just as galactic disk, but all galaxies actually have galactic halo, where all the stars that are in the galactic disk eventually go into the halo and fall back in at the center of the galaxy and move in those dynamics of a torus.
So this is the basic pattern, you're saying, is the underlying nature of all things. This is the pattern of nature itself.
It is a pattern of nature, and it has, you know, there's more complexity in it that than just a torus shape. First of all, it's a double torus, and because there's Coriolis forces, and so we added torque and Coriolis forces to Einstein field equation.
What is a Coriolis force?
Coriolis forces is the forces that allows things to move in opposite direction. For instance, on Earth, whenever an object is spinning, it's subject to Coriolis forces. On Earth, the Coriolis forces make hurricanes rotate in opposite direction in both hemispheres.
Right.
So in the North Hemisphere, it's rotating in one direction, in the South Hemisphere, in the opposite direction. That's the Coriolis forces. It describes the dynamics of spin on the surface of of angular momentum. So those things have very specific, you know, dynamics that describe the structure of space-time. For instance, even our, you know, when you look at the sun's dynamic, the plasma dynamics on the surface of the sun, you see those Coriolis forces, you see the torque dynamics. When you look at a galaxy, you see the torque dynamics and all this, and that's why they're missing 98% of the mass of the universe.
So you're saying what they call dark matter is really this idea of the force exerted by
Torque. It's space-time torque that they haven't calculated. So obviously, if you're trying to calculate the amount of energy in the wheels of your car, but you don't have the motor to spin those wheels in those equations, you're gonna be missing a majority of the mass or energy that you need to get those wheels spinning.
So you're saying there is no such thing as missing matter or dark matter?
Correct.
There is no such thing.
That was just a cop-out because they couldn't figure out where the 98% of mass they were missing was coming from.
But isn't it a basic law of Newton that force equals mass times acceleration? Isn't
Correct.
That a basic law? So
wouldn't
they take into account that acceleration or the torquing of the universe to account for the force equal to mass? But they didn't do that.
They didn't do that. They abandoned Newtonian physics at cosmological size object, and you know, which was the break that Einstein did, and really kind of, and it was okay because Einstein did, you know, I mean, the Einsteinian physics is very powerful.
Right.
What I'm saying is that you still, you know, you can't just say, well, it all started in the Big Bang, it all started spinning, and since then it's been spinning in an ideal frictionless environment, and we don't need no source to make everything spin. What I'm saying is, no, you need a source of energy to make everything spin, and that source is probably the source of energy that generated the Big Bang in the first place. That's Roding, for instance. Einstein assumed that although everything in the universe spins and rotates, that the universe itself didn't.
Uh-huh.
My theory says no, the universe does spin. Everything in it spins, so thus the universe spins. If the universe spins, then, you know, the dynamics of expansion changes. You'd expect that galaxies would be expanding away from each other at a faster and faster accelerated rate relative to each other at the edge of that universe, which is what we observe. And then you'd have to calculate the source of energy, that is the space-time torque necessary to spin everything.
But what was the source of the Big Bang, or that initial, I mean, do you count?
Well, in this view, the universe is then, you know, divisible to infinity, but so, but in both directions, from infinitely big to infinitely small. Mm-hmm. So that is our universe is in a larger universe that's in a larger universe, and that's right. To infinity. So if we look at it that way, let's just assume that it's like that, just mm-hmm. for a minute, which mm-hmm. actually, if you ask most kids, you know, they'll ask, you know, when you talk to them about our universe being a finite universe with a boundary, they ask, well, what's that in? You know, if our universe ends there, what is our universe in? Which is right. a very good question.
Yeah, sure.
You know, most of the time this is avoided by physics. What I'm saying is that is probably because it's in a larger universe, which is in a larger universe. And then if that's true, then, you know, our physics, these physics, starts to describe that, you know, black holes go through moments of expansion where, you know, they generate material mm-hmm. and they accrete material so that they become very slow and unstable. The amount of space-time torque available mm-hmm. and the amount of material they're dragging is too much, and they have to release material. In terms of star, we call those moments supernova explosion. Mm-hmm. And basically, imagine a supernova explosion mm-hmm. and put it at the universal level, and that's how we got here.
It's related to chaos theory, where systems have to break down in order to go to another level of complexity.
Exactly. And basically, what I'm saying is that the Big Bang is just one of those moments. It was an immense black hole that released much of its material, generated our universe, and spun back up, orbiting all of our universe as a result, and then creating smaller black holes we call stars and so on that do the same thing, which makes, you know, solar systems do that, you know, and so on, all the way down to atomic structures and subatomic particles.
But if we're going to bring consciousness back into that now, was consciousness then before that, or consciousness as a result of that? How do you equate consciousness within that whole theory of pattern development?
Well, you know, in an infinite universe of infinite division, there's no before or after. Mm-hmm. There's just presence. Uh-huh. There's only so in that sense you could say that it's always been there. It's never been the egg or the chicken. It's always been both.
Right.
And basically consciousness, or the movement of information through the event horizons of different scale black holes in the universe, just is the foundation of creation and consciousness. So matter cannot exist without information transfer or consciousness, and consciousness cannot exist without matter, and the two are complementary and feedback onto each other to create the dynamics that we see as creation.
But you were also saying we won't be able to actually move to this next level of understanding until we mature as a conscious race, right? We won't be able to have this kind of technology that goes along with this theory until we evolve, in a sense, because we've been functioning at one level of complexity, let's say, but we need to shift in order to integrate your theories.
Right. I think the shift is happening on the planet already. People are sensing that there's a, first of all, that there's a shift in our solar system, there's a shift on our planet. They're sensing that we have to go to a level of understanding where we become global.
Yeah.
And we understand at least our global, you know, relationship. But this theory helps us to get there, because it starts, when you start to think of billions of atoms that you're made of as mini black holes mm-hmm. with infinite potential, you start to connect with your infinite nature, your inherent infinite nature. And when you do, you start to see everyone else as an infinite potential being. And then you feel connected to them. You feel connected to everything. And when you feel that connectivity, then it becomes very difficult to go to war, to destroy each other. And you start to collaborate. It really is a crucial time, the evolution of consciousness. It happened to microbes, you know, early in the evolution of Earth. You know, microbial life was on the brinks of extinction because they were producing too much oxygen, which for them was
a waste product
and pollution. And they had to move to collaboration and make a multi-cellular system that could breathe the oxygen in order to be able to survive. And it was a very, very tentative moment in the history of microbial life at that time, where going from competition to collaboration was very, very difficult. And I think we're right there on this cusp of that change.
We have the chance to repeat that pattern.
Right, at the next fractal level, at the next scale level, which is the humans now that are the microbes that got together, you know?
Right. Many people talk about this fractal pattern of evolution, so we're just at that moment. You also say we're getting help from crop circles. You have a very interesting understanding of what crop circles are.
Right. It's really interesting that many of the patterns that I was describing in my equations start to appear in crop circles after I had worked on them. And the crop circles I appeared in seemed to be crop circles that were not the result of hoaxes.
Right.
And
well, they're so complex. The design and the geometry is just, it seems like who would be thinking these, you know, they're saying there's new geometric patterns that were created. So you're finding answers for your physics questions in the crop circles?
Well, the answers I found seem to appear in crop circles. And so I you know, to me, there might be a reason. Maybe we're being educated about the structure of creation. Maybe they're trying to move us along so that we're prepared for the changes that are going on our planet. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really crucial at this time that we decode these and apply them to advanced physics and move to a new level of comprehension and a new level of technology with it.
Well, it's so exciting, the work you're doing. If you're ideas are really put into practice, it seems the implications are tremendous.
The implications are huge. You know, I mean, in the future, if this series is correct, we could be developing very advanced technologies that would make everything we have today look like child play. Putting our way of doing things history as a moment in human evolution where the advancements of humans were at a very dangerous state, because this new technology would be very much aligned with the fundamental forces of nature, would be very powerful and very safe to use.
Wow. Is there anything that you that doesn't fit into this equation? Any questions you're still asking?
There's always questions. Right. There's an infinite amount of questions. Right. But definitely, I believe that this theory resolves a lot of the current questions that are going on in physics. And a lot of the questions and supports a lot of the knowledge that's already present in spiritual, understandings around the world.
Wow, very exciting. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I've been talking to Nassim Haram.
Haramain.
Nassim Haramain, whose website is theresonanceproject.org. He'll be coming out with DVDs and lectures. Hopefully he'll be on tour lecturing about these ideas, because
I will be. I'm a very busy man.
I know.
And I will be on tour, so stay in touch. Go to our website, theresonanceproject.org, and you can get on the mailing list so that you get schedules and so on, and as well, when the DVD comes out, there'll be announcements and so on, and you stay on top of what's going on.
Thank you, Nassim. I've been talking to Nassim Haramain, who's the founder of theresonanceproject.org. He's coming up with some very exciting new theories. I'm Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, I'm at 212-473-6388 or newrealities@earthlink.net. But thank you for watching. Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and I'm interviewing someone today who I wanted to talk to for a long time. I feel he really has a link between consciousness and science, and he has the theories that will unfold the next phase of our evolution. His name is Nassim Haramein. And thank you so much for sharing your work with the world, because...
Thank you for having me.
Because what I get is that, you, from what you said also, is that you created these a theory that combines quantum physics, Einstein's relativity, and cuts out the strong and weak forces. Basically, what I get you say, you says there's basically two forces to the universe, gravity and electromagnetism.
Right. I've written a theory that described the vacuum as an energetic structured vacuum. And instead of thinking of objects defining the space, this theory looks at the space defining objects. And so this is a complete reversal of the way we think of reality, mm-hmm. of the space we live in, how we are in the universe, and so on. And there's fundamental implication in that change that applies to physics and the way we think of gravity, electromagnetism, the strong and weak force, which in my equations I eliminate completely.
What I also like about you is you bring in the understanding that the vacuum is intelligent. So the void, the quantum void that emits all, is the intelligence of the universe itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fear is that equates to God. But the other way you're talking about it is just it's embedded in all matter. So,
right.
How do you just talk not against the religious concept of God, but more an intelligence inside of us?
Yeah, in this view, the structure of the vacuum itself is the innate function of consciousness, meaning mm-hmm. that the vacuum is like the pool of information of all things radiating in mm-hmm. it. So in that sense, you could, if you wanted to put a word on it, you could say the word God. Like it has all the information mm-hmm. at all time. And it feeds it back through every single subatomic particles and mm-hmm. atoms and galaxy and so on at all scales. So it's learning about itself. It's constantly changing. Mm-hmm. My theory describes all scales of the universe, from universal size to superclusters, to galaxies, to stars, to atoms, to subatomic particles, as different scales, black hole. Mm-hmm. And each one feeds between the gravitational field, which is the information of the vacuum moving in, and expands electromagnetic fields, which is the information of the vacuum moving out. And the two creates mm-hmm. this feedback loop that right. is the foundation for consciousness.
And creating black holes. So and you're saying we're all inside a black hole, but getting back to the idea of consciousness. So did consciousness create matter, as it seems like you're saying, as opposed to matter creating consciousness, which is the old paradigm?
Not really, no. In this work, what we call consciousness, or which could be more accurately described as self-awareness, mm-hmm. knowing that you're there, right? Mm-hmm. Demands a feedback. In order to be mm-hmm. self-aware, you got to, for instance, see yourself in the mm-hmm. mirror and say, that's me, and know that that's you. And so it demands a feedback. Mm-hmm. And so the dynamic mm-hmm. of the feedback between the electromagnetic field and the gravitational field is what I term self-awareness, which is what we think of as consciousness. So it is the dynamic of the information transfer that mm-hmm. actually produces all of our material world that is fundamentally the conscious entity that we think of. So that means that everything is consciousness and everything is matter. You cannot dissociate them, and that's really important to understand. You can't dissociate matter from consciousness, matter from spirituality, matter from thoughts. It's all one, and we need to understand the dynamic of that one structure in order to have it unify instead of separating it, instead of having the physicist on one side saying it's all matter and having the spiritual people on the other side saying it's all consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's both mm-hmm. at the same time. It's never the egg or the chicken. It's always both.
It's another fractal structure. So even in terms of consciousness or let's say psychology, we exist within a feedback mechanism. I do something you don't like and you give me some feedback, I modify my behavior.
Yeah, exactly. So the universe is doing that in some way. You can apply it to you and me, or you can think of like you're feeding information to the vacuum, and if the vacuum is what produces the material world, then the vacuum feeds you back experiences and that are directly related to how you interpret them, and as you interpret these new experiences you feed it back again and so God goes the wheel of creation, and the result is the universe learns about itself that way.
Well, that's the exciting thing about your theory. It's as if the universe is constantly learning about itself, and us as a representative consciousness are moving into new territories all the time.
Right, which is, exactly. Yeah. And you could think of all the information that's dispersed, like that's radiated in the vacuum everywhere in the universe at one time, being the collection of all information potential available. Mm-hmm. Yet, because of synergy, which says that you know, that a system is more than the addition of all the parts, because all the parts together creates, like you could think of it as the new question. Millisecond is there's the new question that's created from the result of all the information that's available. So there's this constant learning, there's this constant pull towards higher level of consciousness, higher level of organization, higher level of coherency.
And it's fresh each moment. It's released as freshness, newness, a novelty, ongoing, into forever.
Right. Because if at any moment you could create exactly what you wanted, meaning that if any moment a being could actually say, "I'm going to create this exactly the way I want it," and the result was that it was not modified by all the rest of the information in the universe, and it came back to you exactly how you expected it, then the universe would end, right? Because within seconds, you would create the ultimate universe, right? So and you would say, okay, that's it. And then you'd be bored from there on. So
nothing's ever what we want it to be, even on a personal level?
It's always a little bit unexpected. It's always modified by all of the rest of the information in the universe, because the universe, the vacuum, has to coordinate all the information to create this incredible complexity that's highly coherent, that's highly organized. And so in order for that to happen, it has, you know, everything that you send to the vacuum is modified so that everything coordinates. So that you can't say at one moment, say, "I'm going to turn off the sun because I'm a little too hot," right? And now all of a sudden, you know, parts of the world is freezing over, right? There's a consensus. The information you're feeding the universe is modified by all of the rest of the information available, so that that everything is coherent in this consensus reality.
Right, but sometimes our consciousness, our individual consciousness, does link to the, let's say, the vacuum consciousness. We become one with it. I guess in that moment, there's really nothing we want, right? Because we're moving forward. There's nothing we want to manifest, because we are.
In the moment, you could think of that moment as the moment of enlightenment or the moment of nirvana. But in that moment, you can't see. You can see that it would be that all information would be available to you. In that moment of connecting with the fundamental vacuum, of coming in contact with the fundamental vacuum, you would have all the information available. However, the new question would emerge, and the new question would emerge again, and the new question would emerge again. So enlightenment is a process.
Right.
It's a constant learning. And the perfect master must be the perfect student. And so from that view, you can start to understand the principle of evolution.
Because the universe is constantly learning about itself from itself. You see. So what will it take for a normal mainstream scientist to get this? I mean, you know, you're sort of working in a vacuum in a way.
Right.
So what will it take?
Well, you know, I'm writing equations and I've written many papers that starts to lay out the math and the dynamics in which these functions occur in space-time. Mm-hmm. So as I publish more and more papers, it becomes more and more, it brings this awareness to the scientific community, mm-hmm. And more scientists are excited about what I'm writing and understanding it and are moving in that direction and are adding to it. And so there's new collaborations that are building. But all these things takes time, you know. It took some 10 years for Einstein to bring his theories to the world. And so, you know, we have to be patient. But as well, I do a lot of effort to bring this information to the public at large because the implication of what I'm writing in physics is huge for the individuals out there in their home. How they think of themselves, how they think of the universe and themselves in it.
Well, that's it. Nassim has produced a DVD called Crossing the Event Horizon from the resonanceproject.org. But what is the implications of these theories? One big one is everything's a black hole and there are black holes nested in black holes, the universe, the sun, the galaxy. We all have levels of black hole. But what's the practical implication and how can we use this in the future?
Well, there's two levels. One of them is the philosophical practical interpretation. What it means to you when you are at home, when you think of yourself, do you think of yourself as isolated from all thing, or do you think of yourself as part of this incredible structure, of this incredible metric of the universe that's connecting at all levels? And do you think of yourself as influencing this metric? Do you think of yourself as influencing the world, as influencing the universe by the way you interpret things?
So we can influence the universe. With your theories, it seems like we give feedback to the universe as well as the universe giving feedback
to us. Yeah, right. But we can't forget that the universe is giving feedback to us. And that's a part that typically spiritual people have a tendency to forget, is that you're not just the one creating your reality. Right. The reality is creating you.
And it's a dance, you're saying?
And it's a dance, and it's scale related, meaning that you can influence your scale to a certain extreme, but at one point you got to gather more momentum for more people so that you can start to influence larger and larger scales. So it demands that you actually collect support, that you're able to collaborate and all this to move further and further.
Technically, I mean, I think the implications of a mechanism, can you talk a little bit about what it means to, like you said in your lecture, have a black hole in your backyard? And is that practical and is that actually feasible at some later date to actually?
Yeah, I think so. Actually, so not only is it practical for you in your living room to start to think of yourself that way and to start to see your all the objects around you as connected to you through this invisible grid of the structure of the vacuum, but as well when you start thinking that way and you start writing the math and the physics that describes this, you start to see that there's engineering possibility there. If the vacuum is full of the information that creates all things, what if you could create an object that taps into the vacuum? If you could generate another little scales of these nested scales, and that you could control this scale, you would have access to enormous amount of information, enormous amount of energy, enormous amount of capability to curve space-time, create gravitational fields. If this is true, then our future is looking very, very bright, and it's looking very exciting, and it's not that far off.
Well, you have the theories that say, okay, that it's possible to create mini black holes. That's looks like it's actually practical. What do we need to have in order for that to happen? People say a lot of energy, but what do you think we need?
Actually, from my equations, the minimum the idea, first of all, is that mini black holes are generated by nature all the time.
Really?
That is, that there's not just one big bang in some miraculous way that created all the atoms, but actually that there is atoms being created at the center of galaxies all the time, at the center of stars all the time, mm-hmm. and that there's a continuous creation process that is occurring right now, and that's why the universe is expanding, and actually that's why it's accelerating and it expands as well, and as well because it spins. But the other thing is that if you wanted to make an artificial singularity, mm-hmm. if you wanted to even just like try to cohere, because if you calculate how much energy is in the vacuum mm-hmm. to produce the universe, you would only need to connect with it, to cohere it, to tap it, just a teeny weeny bit, just a teeny weeny bit of it would mm-hmm. be an enormous amount of energy.
Mm.
And so if you wanted to organize it so that you could use it, you'd probably need to start to understand the spin component of mm-hmm. it and how things mm. orbit and how mm. it interacts and what is its geometry and all this. And that's some of the math I've started to write.
So, and how space-time twirls together. And
that's right. Coriolis effect mm-hmm. and all this. Mm-hmm. The dynamics of this vacuum structure would be have to be known so that you could mm-hmm. engineer a device that could tap into it. Mm. And that's really a possibility if the universe is truly the result of the vacuum structure.
Well, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking, well, how does this relate to the human being? And it seems like this spinning vortex is the thing that's giving us life. I mean, it's the spirit itself. And does that, in your theories, go anywhere outside the body? I mean, what is the essence of soul, spirit,
yeah,
in your theory?
Yeah, actually, you know, if you look at spin components in my theory, it is the base of all the forces, meaning that you can think of the vacuum as this pool mm-hmm. of water. And when the pool is spinning, it's producing little vortices.
And yeah.
Wherever there's a vortice in the vacuum, we mm-hmm. say, oh, there's a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could be a star, could be a galaxy, you know, the big vortex arms of a galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be an atom or a subatomic particle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the spin dynamic is fundamental to, you know, the way we look at this vacuum and mm-hmm. how the vacuum interacts to produce mm-hmm. our reality.
So where's the soul then?
How matter gathers
yeah.
and how information gathers.
Uh-huh.
And so if you wanted to do a physical interpretation of the soul,
mm-hmm.
you could say that the soul is the information that's gathered by the vortices generated by a specific set of information, by a specific being.
Mm-hmm.
So in the vacuum, a vortex
mm-hmm.
Would gather a very specific set of information.
Mm-hmm.
You can think of yourself as this little vortex, like for instance, the billions of atoms that you're made of, all spinning very fast and gathering a very specific set of information.
Mm.
And that would be what maybe spiritual people would call the soul. It would be a set of information embedded in the structure of the vacuum.
But then it just, within vortices in a pool, that would then just, when the vortices stop spinning, it just dissolves into the
pool. But it's a really interesting thing, an experiment you can do in your tub when you take a bathtub next time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bring with you a plate in your tub and try to get the water to go calm, mm-hmm. and then push the plate in the tub, and you'll mm-hmm. see two little vortices you know, organizing on either side of the plate,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be turning in opposite direction. And if you look carefully, you'll see a little string that connects them under the water. And if you put your hand in the string, you'll see the vortex disappear.
Uh-huh.
And if you take your hand out, you'll see them reappear.
Yeah.
So when the vortices disappear into the
mm-hmm.
pool of information of mm-hmm. the vacuum, it doesn't mean it's gone. It doesn't mean that there's no more. It just means it has integrated with all the information of the vacuum. But it can recohere in vortices in the correct conditions.
And we never actually lose information is one of your
That's
things.
Right.
So the information of who we were, let's say, as a being is always in
present.
Some,
there's no information loss. There's no energy loss. It's always present. So it can recohere. But what it's doing is that it's constantly changing. It's constantly being modified. It's constantly learning, and that is the driving force of creation
in the present. So it seems like you do have a theory of everything. Is there from physics to spirituality to ancient civilizations, which we can also talk about, but you know, and is there any anomalies? Is there anything you haven't figured out? No, really, because
there is plenty.
Like what's an anomaly within your system that you say I just can't seem to fit this in, that's like sticking out at you.
It's difficult to define all of the dynamics of nature, meaning if I was to answer that question honestly,
okay,
I would say I haven't found anything that doesn't fit, except that every second there's something new.
Right.
And so that new thing has to be fitted in. And so there's new part of the theory that grows and grows and grows because I'm getting new sets of information constantly. So it's a constant growth. And I don't think there'll ever be a theory that can explain everything, because everything is constantly changing. So it is the theory. But if the theory is fundamentally correct, I truly believe that there is fundamental understandings. And if they are clear and fundamentally correct, I think a theory can grow in a very harmonious way, in a unified way, and continue to incorporate more and more complexity, just as nature does.
Which is what you're doing. So your theory, you don't feel, is static. This is a set of formulas, and this is how the universe is. Your theory is a dynamic theory.
It is dynamic, although there's fundamental axioms to it that seems to be accurate, that seems to work, that seems to define a new level of understanding of our universe. And I'm sure that eventually those will change and evolve, and hopefully somebody will be able to add to it that makes it even more precise and give us even more capability to interact with the universe and understand it better. But I think it's a very large change already from what is currently being propagated in the mainstream.
Well, we'll see. You're saying also that you were living inside a big black hole. The universe itself is a black hole.
Yes.
But that probably isn't the end to the fractal. That's probably the universe itself is...
It's probably embedded in a larger one, which is embedded in the larger one, and so on. And so there is probably infinite amount of fractal boundary condition. If you say to a seven-year-old, this is the boundary of our universe, as we say usually, you know, in class now. We say, our universe has a boundary, and that's what it's in. You know, the first thing the kid asks you is, well, what is that in, and how did it get there?
Right,
and so my point here is to say, actually, there is no such thing as an end to anything. There's only boundary conditions that are embedded from infinitely big to infinitely small.
Right.
And what's important is not if there's a beginning or an end, but what's important is how it embeds itself, what is the dynamics that produce the embeddedness, and how we can understand those dynamics to make our world a better world.
So, thank you. I get that. And just talk as we kind of wrap up here about the evolution, where we're going as a civilization, how we are need this next step, and maybe 2012. Is that really a critical point?
Well, you know, if you look at the way the universe learns and the way the things grow in our universe, it seems like they go through boundary condition to boundary condition. There's quantum jumps. There's moments. They're very specific moments where energy levels reach a certain level and then eventually get into a chaotic mode, and then they go into really high level of chaos just before they pop into the next resonant
level. Right, it looks like systems are going to break down and totally collapse, or they jump to the next level.
So I think we're experiencing one of those moments in our history right now, and that is telling you know, it's telling because you can see the chaotic functions, you know, increasing and increasing in our society, and you can see those signs for already quite a while, and now I think we're getting really, really close to popping into this new level, and so I think that the 2012 dates and all this are, you know, are boundary condition, and that's why I like to think. And I called my DVD set Crossing the Event Horizon. Mm-hmm. It's crossing this boundary condition. It's our crossing of our consciousness into this new level. It's crossing of our understanding into this new level, the new physics and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's crossing the technological advancements into this new level as well.
Well, it seems like your theories are very much a part of the new level. And you also have said that new level is about being a galactic being, getting off the Earth as a... as one level of finiteness into the next level.
Right. So, you know, I think these theories and this new understanding leads directly to our capacity to literally ascend. And I don't mean it in terms of spirituality, but as well in terms of spirituality, but literally produce technology that allows us to move off the surface of our planet and actually start to experience our universe as an abundant universe. You know, right now we're kind of stuck on the surface, kind of stuck on a conveyor belt, you know, and we have very little capability to regulate our lives. If something happens to our planet, it's pretty well over. A society that reached higher levels of consciousness, higher levels of technology, would demand that they are able to get off the surface of the planet and of their planet before large cataclysms occur, which could be quite frequent, cosmologically speaking, in terms of planetary systems. Planetary systems are not that stable. And so you have, a society has to learn to understand gravity and to understand how to use it so that they're not necessarily stuck to the surface if something happens.
Great. I really appreciate your work. I think it's very, very important that enough people integrate this new knowledge to take us into what my program's called New Realities.
Yes.
And I just welcome you to come back anytime.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here.
Anything you have to say about living into a new realities?
Yeah. You know, may the vacuum be with you.
Thank you. I'm talking to Nassim Harmeen.
Harmeen.
TheResonanceProject.org. Get the DVD, the Crossing the Event Horizon. I hope you'll be back. And this is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. Email me at newrealities@earthlink.net or check my website, newrealities.com. Thank you.